Have you ever found yourself staring at a company's annual report or maybe an investment analysis, feeling that familiar pang of, okay, this looks important, but gosh, where do I even begin to peel back the layers? Especially when it's an industry often perceived as, well, complex or, dare I say, maybe a little dry, like insurance. That feeling, that challenge of making sense of really dense information, is exactly why we do what we do here on the Deep Mav. Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into RLI Corp. Now, that's a name you might not see plastered on every billboard, but believe me, it embodies a truly fascinating story. A story of disciplined underwriting and consistent, often exceptional profitability in the, let's face it, notoriously turbulent world of insurance. This isn't just about parsing numbers, it's really about understanding a unique business philosophy that has created some remarkable results over decades. Our mission today is to extract the critical insights from the investment analysis we've looked at, giving you a clear, actionable understanding of RLI's business model. It's frankly impressive performance, and its strategic positioning in a really dynamic market.
That's right. And what's truly compelling about RLI, I think, is that while they operate in a distinct specialized niche, their fundamental approach, it offers valuable lessons that actually extend far beyond just the insurance sector. We'll be exploring how they've systematically carved out a durable competitive advantage and skillfully navigated some pretty challenging market dynamics. It really showcases how a precise, specialized focus can lead to outsized and sustainable success. Our aim is definitely to cut through the jargon and get to what truly matters for understanding this company's enduring strength.
Absolutely. So get ready. We're going to uncover what we might call their secret sauce, right? We'll delve into their financial statements to see how that philosophy translates into hard numbers, explore the risks and headwinds they face, chart their avenues for future growth, and finally, consider what their current valuation tells us about how the market perceives this unique player. By the end of this deep dive, you'll definitely be well informed on RLI Corp. Okay, let's begin at the very foundation. What exactly is RLI Corp? At its core, it's a U.S.-based specialty insurance company. Now, that word specialty isn't just some label, it's really the defining characteristic. It means they don't just insure anything and everything, they're incredibly selective. This selectivity is what we mean by disciplined underwriting. They're just very, very careful about what risks they take on. And this approach has, quite remarkably, led to incredible consistent profitability year after year. It's pretty amazing. Just to give you a sense of their scale, in 2024, they hit a significant milestone, surpassing $2 million in gross premiums written for the first time ever. What does hitting that kind of revenue mark signal about their business, especially with that specialty focus?
Well, it signals a couple of important things, I think. Firstly, sustained growth isn't just about getting bigger for its own sake. For RLI, it underscores that their disciplined approach can scale effectively within their chosen niches. Secondly, it really highlights that they're absolutely not trying to be all things to all people. RLI specifically targets niche markets, often those that are underserved or frankly just too complex for larger standard lines carriers to handle profitably. This precise, focused approach is absolutely central to their entire strategy. It lets them avoid that direct head-to-head price competition and instead leverage deep, specialized expertise in areas where they can truly add value and, crucially, command appropriate premiums for the risk.
Right. So they're not casting a wide net. They're more like a highly skilled fisher using a very finely tuned spear, maybe, going for specific high-value catches. To really understand how they apply the strategy, we need to break down their business into its three main pillars. These are RLI's primary underwriting segments, and each one plays a crucial role in their diversified risk profile. Let's start with their largest. Could you describe their casualty business and what types of coverages they specialize in, especially thinking about that recent 15% growth in 2024?
Certainly. The casualty segment is RLI's largest by premium volume, no question. It offers a really broad range of liability coverages. Think of it as providing protection for unforeseen events that could lead to financial responsibility for their clients. This includes things like general liability for commercial insured, say, manufacturers or contractors covering things like product liability claims or accidents that happen on their premises. They also delve into environmental liability, which covers specialized pollution risks and offer both commercial and personal umbrella policies. Now, these umbrella policies are particularly interesting because they provide an extra layer of liability protection, typically above and beyond what standard auto or home insurance policies might cover. That 15% increase in gross premiums written in 2024, that was fueled by a combination of smart rate increases and strong new business generation, particularly in those personal umbrella and small commercial channels. It really demonstrates their ability to find profitable growth even in a competitive environment.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So if you're a manufacturer with unique product liability risks, or maybe you as an individual want that extra peace of mind beyond your standard car insurance, RLI steps in where others might hesitate or just say no. How does their property segment fit into this specialized approach? What kinds of unique property risks are they tackling there?
Right. The property segment focuses on specialized property risks that often fall outside the appetite of standard insurers. So this isn't your everyday homeowner's policy, not at all. Key product lines here include commercial property, marine insurance for things like cargo and vessels, and crucially, coverage for catastrophe-exposed properties. Think like those found in Hawaii, which, as we unfortunately know, can face significant natural disaster risks. Despite some pretty substantial natural catastrophe activity globally in 2024, this segment still managed to grow its gross premiums written by a healthy 7%. That growth was primarily due to necessary rate increases being applied, reflecting the higher risk and a consistent flow of new business opportunities in these specialized areas where they have expertise.
Okay, and then we have the surety segment. Now, this might be less familiar to some listeners. What exactly does surety insurance entail, and what does its 9% growth in 2024 tell us about its importance to RLI?
Good question. The surety segment basically provides financial guarantees for the performance of contractual and commercial obligations. Think of it as a promise, backed by RLI's financial strength, that a contract will be fulfilled as agreed. This is absolutely critical for industries like construction, for instance, where performance bonds are often required to ensure a project is completed, or perhaps that a vendor meets their obligations. It's a form of risk mitigation for the party requiring the bond. The 9% increase in gross premiums written in 2024 was a direct benefit of, well, favorable economic conditions spurring construction and commercial activity. It also benefited from the expansion of RLI's partnerships with producers. Those are essentially the brokers helping them find this specialized business. This segment's consistent growth really highlights its stability and its complementary nature within their overall portfolio. It diversifies their earnings stream.
Yeah, that diversification across these three segments sounds very strategic. It seems to allow them to balance different risk exposures and different market cycles, too. So if one market is softening, maybe they can lean on the strength of another, creating a more stable and resilient financial foundation overall. Now, it's not just what they insure, but also where they do it. You mentioned RLI strategically operates in both the specialty admitted and the excess and surplus, or E&S, markets. In 2024, roughly 57% of their total gross premiums came from specialty admitted operations, while a significant 42% came from the E&S market, with just a minor 1% from specialty reinsurance. The E&S market seems to play a surprisingly crucial role in RLI's bespoke approach. Could you elaborate on how they leverage that flexibility for unique risks? You called it almost like a tailor earlier.
That's an excellent analogy, yeah. The E&S market is, in essence, the bespoke tailor of insurance. It's incredibly crucial to RLI's strategy because it's less regulated than the standard admitted market. This allows insurers operating there to be much more nimble and creative. If a risk is too unique, maybe too complex, or simply hard to place for standard admitted insurers, perhaps because of its unusual nature and an emerging exposure or a high catastrophe potential, the E&S market steps in. RLI can then underwrite these non-standard risks with much more flexible policy forms and, critically, with unregulated premium rates. This flexibility is absolutely key. It enables them to craft highly customized solutions for complex exposures that larger, more rigid carriers simply can't or won't handle effectively. This bespoke solution and the pricing flexibility is a huge differentiator, yes, but more importantly, it's where their deep underwriting expertise truly creates value by allowing them to accurately price these unique risks.
Got it. So underneath all this operational structure and market savvy, what's the absolute guiding principle? What's the foundational philosophy that truly defines RLI?
Yeah, it really all comes down to how they operate. Unlike many of their peers, RLI has cultivated this profound 50-year-old corporate culture that unequivocally prioritizes underwriting profit over simple top-line growth. This isn't just some mission statement hanging on a wall. It's the very fabric of their decision-making, day in and day out. Management explicitly states, and I'm quoting here from our sources, "We do not have top-line goals at our line." Think about that. This whole ethos is reinforced by an incentive structure that rewards underwriters for maximizing underwriting profit, even if that means strategically shrinking premium volume in unfavorable market conditions just to protect profitability. And the proof, as they say, is in the pudding. This disciplined approach has led to RLI achieving an underwriting profit in an incredible 28 consecutive years through 2023. That is just a remarkable feat in an industry known for its cycles and volatility.
Wow, that multi-decade streak of profitability is certainly compelling. In a world often obsessed with market share and, you know, just growing the top line, it really begs the question, how does a company maintain such a strict, decades-long focus on profitability? And maybe more importantly, how difficult is it really for competitors to copy that?
That's precisely the point. It's because this philosophy is so deeply ingrained in their corporate culture and, crucially, in their compensation structure.
Mm-hmm.
Underwriters aren't rewarded for simply writing more business. They're rewarded for writing profitable business, full stop. This acts as a powerful competitive barrier because it's a cultural trait, a way of thinking and operating that takes years, honestly, generations even to build. It's incredibly difficult for competitors to simply copy. You can't just mandate that kind of discipline from the top down. It has to be lived and breathed throughout the entire organization. It has to be in the DNA.
That makes perfect sense. It's not just a nice idea. It's literally how they operate day in and day out. And this philosophy is clearly backed by a comprehensive risk management framework. It's not just about what they think. It's fundamentally about what they do. Could you walk us through the various layers of this framework? How do they actually implement this discipline?
Absolutely. It's definitely a multifaceted approach. First, they practice what they call disciplined risk selection. RLIs actively avoids competing on price. Instead, they focus on markets where their expertise in underwriting, claims handling, and service gives them a true competitive edge. They have a documented history of exiting markets when pricing becomes irrational or conditions turn adverse, and conversely, entering new niches where they believe they can achieve profitable risk transfer. They're not afraid to walk away. Next, they have robust catastrophe exposure management. The company actively manages its exposure to major catastrophic events. This involves things like quantifying policy limits in regions vulnerable to hurricanes, earthquakes, and wildfires. They utilize sophisticated computer-assisted modeling techniques, and they purchase reinsurance to reduce the financial impact of any single large event. They aren't just hoping for the best, they're planning for the worst, with a very analytical, data-driven approach. Then there's conservative reserving. This is all about accurately setting aside money today for claims that will be paid out in the future. RLI establishes its loss reserves through a rigorous process incorporating historical data, detailed actuarial analysis, and projections of future trends in claim frequency and severity. A strong validation point for their prudence here is their history of favorable development on prior years' loss reserves. For instance, they had a $24.4 million net positive impact on underwriting income in the second quarter of 2025, alone from reserves set aside in previous years proving more than adequate. This shows they're often over-reserved rather than under-reserved, which is a clear sign of financial strength and careful management. And finally, they maintain a high-quality investment portfolio. Their investment strategy is, frankly, quite conservative. The primary goal is always the preservation of capital to ensure the company can meet its obligations to policyholders. That comes first. The secondary goal is to grow book value through a total return approach focused on a diversified portfolio of high-quality marketable securities, primarily fixed income.
So it's really a comprehensive system, from carefully picking the risks they take on to protecting themselves from natural disasters, to how they set aside money for future claims and how they invest their capital. Every single piece reinforces this profit-first mindset. It sounds like a deeply integrated approach. How does all this translate into RLI's business model being described as dynamic and opportunistic? That seems almost contradictory to disciplined.
It seems that way, but it's not. Precisely because each component reinforces the others, it creates a system that isn't static, it's adaptive. RLI's management has demonstrated a consistent willingness to strategically shrink or grow its presence in various segments based on prevailing market conditions. This adaptability, this ability to pivot capital and underwriting resources toward the most attractive opportunities within the insurance cycle, is a key element of its long-term success and a critical differentiator in a cyclical industry. For example, you can see this flexibility evident right now in their recent strategy. Deliberately pulling back from the highly competitive E&S property market where pricing has become aggressive, while simultaneously pushing for significant rate increases and pursuing selective growth in liability lines, particularly those with wheels-based exposures like commercial auto. They're just not rigidly tied to specific growth targets at all costs. Profitability dictates the path.
All right, so we've got a solid grasp on who RLI is and how they operate internally. That's great. Now let's maybe zoom out a bit and look at the broader environment they operate in, the specialty insurance market itself. This market is actually undergoing a period of, well, robust growth and significant evolution. The market is projected to expand from approximately $142 billion in 2024 to nearly $279 billion by 2031. That's some serious growth. Why is specialty insurance expanding so much faster than the rest of the P&C property and casualty market? What powerful forces are really driving that expansion?
Yeah, that's a big jump. There are several powerful secular trends at play here, and they mostly boil down to the increasing complexity of risks in the modern world. It's just getting harder to insure things. First, we have emerging and complex risks. The whole risk landscape is becoming incredibly intricate. Think about climate change, for example. It's contributing to a higher frequency and severity of natural disasters. Hurricanes, wildfires, floods, you name it. This causes standard insurers to restrict coverage or even withdraw from high-risk areas entirely, creating a significant vacuum and therefore a massive opportunity for specialty carriers like RLI to step in with tailored solutions, priced appropriately for that risk. Simultaneously, the rapid digitization of our economy has made cyber risk a primary concern for businesses of all sizes, across basically every sector. The cyber insurance market specifically is expected to double in size over the next decade alone. These aren't just minor risks, they're systemic, evolving challenges that really require specialized underwriting knowledge. Secondly, technological transformation is a huge factor driving change. Artificial intelligence, AI in particular, is fundamentally reshaping the entire insurance value chain. Insurers are leveraging AI to enhance underwriting by rapidly analyzing submissions and integrating vast amounts of third-party data. It's also improving claims processing through things like automated damage assessment, and it's making fraud detection far more effective. A recent survey even found that an astounding 99% of insurers are either currently investing in or planning to invest in generative AI capabilities. This indicates a broad industry-wide commitment to technological advancement, which actually helps specialty players manage complex data more effectively and efficiently. And finally, we're seeing what's called a bifurcated pricing cycle in the P&C market. After several years of broad-based rate increases, what we call a hard market, conditions are now diverging significantly depending on the line of business. So on one hand, the commercial property market has seen an influx of new capital and increased competition, which is leading to rate softening and more challenging underwriting conditions. Rates are coming down. But on the other hand, casualty lines, especially things like commercial auto, umbrella policies, and excess liability, continue to experience significant rate hardening. Rates are still going up there. This is driven by persistent loss cost inflation, rising repair costs, and that phenomenon known as social inflation, where larger jury awards and more aggressive litigation drive up the ultimate cost of liability claims. Just to give you some context, data from the second quarter of 2025 showed that while global commercial insurance rates declined by 4% on average, casualty rates actually increased by 4%, and that was led by a sharp 9% rise right here in the U.S. market.
Wow, that's a fascinating split in the market dynamics. It sounds like a challenging environment for sure, but also one where specialists like RLI could really shine by being selective, right? By picking their spots. How do you see RLI's competitive positioning and its fundamental moat, its competitive advantage, holding up against their peers in this kind of environment?
Well, RLI has definitely carved out a strong position precisely by focusing on those niches where it can leverage its expertise rather than just competing on scale or a wrong price. Their competitive advantages, their moat, aren't just financial, they're qualitative and cultural, which makes them harder to replicate. While they face different competitors in each segment, you know, companies like Arch, Chubb, and Markel and Casualty, Lexington and Property, or AIG and Surety, their real strength lies in their distinctive capabilities. Their most significant advantage, I'd argue, is their superior underwriting expertise. And this isn't just a buzzword. It's decades of specialized knowledge built up in their chosen markets. And that creates a formidable barrier to entry for others just trying to jump in. It's the primary driver of their consistent long-term underwriting profitability. The clearest evidence of this is their 10-year average statutory combined ratio of 88.5.
Okay, let's pause there. You mentioned that combined ratio again. Can you quickly break down what that 88.5 number really tells us? Why is it so exceptional compared to the industry average of around 100.2?
Absolutely. So a combined ratio measures how much of every premium dollar an insurer spends on claims and operating expenses. A ratio below 100 means they're making an underwriting profit. Above 100 means they're losing money just on the insurance itself before investments. So RLI's 88.5 means that for every dollar of premium they collected over that decade, they paid out only 88.5 cents in claims and expenses. They kept 11.5 cents as pure underwriting profit. That 12-point outperformance over the P&C industry average of 100.2 is striking. It's a massive gap, sustained over a long period.
Okay, that's a huge difference. How much of that gap do you think is truly attributable to RLI's unique culture and underwriting philosophy, and how much might just be a benefit of operating in those potentially less competitive specialty niches?
That's a great question. It's likely a synergistic effect, but I'd say it's primarily driven by their culture and discipline. While operating in less competitive niches certainly helps, it's RLI's rigorous adherence to its profit-first philosophy and the deep expertise embedded in its underwriters that allows them to consistently identify and correctly price those profitable niches. Other companies could try to enter those same niches, but without that ingrained discipline, they'd likely struggle with adverse selection, getting the bad risks, or simply underpricing the business just to get volume. This culture is also why they maintained exceptional financial strength. RLI's balance sheet is a critical competitive tool. They hold an A+ superior financial strength rating from AM Best, and their outlook was recently revised to positive, which is significant, and an A strong rating from S&P. These high ratings provide immense confidence to brokers and policyholders that RLI will absolutely be able to meet its claims obligations, which is, you know, non-negotiable in this business.
Yeah, that strong financial backing is clearly fundamental. And then there's their unique ownership culture. You mentioned RLI fosters this through its employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP. By making employees owners of the company, the ESOP directly aligns their interests with those of external shareholders. How does that actually impact their day-to-day operations and reinforce that long-term profit-first mentality?
Well, an ESOP isn't just another employee benefit. It cultivates a really deep sense of shared responsibility and ownership. When employees literally have skin in the game, they are much more likely to make decisions that benefit the long-term health and profitability of the company. It reinforces that profit-first mentality by creating a collective incentive to underwrite carefully, manage expenses efficiently, and frankly, just think like owners. This directly impacts underwriting discipline and overall performance in a positive way.
Right. So given all this, the expertise, the culture, the financial strength, the ESOP, how does this all translate to the impact of the current market environment? With those diverging pricing trends we talked about, it seems like both a challenge and an opportunity for them.
It certainly is. The current market environment really presents a test of RLI's disciplined model. In the softening property market, for example, they show they're willing to shed premium to maintain their profitability standards rather than chasing volume at what they see as inadequate rates. Now, some might see that as a negative, but that flexibility is actually a strength, not a weakness in their view. Conversely, this same discipline positions them incredibly well to capitalize on the hard casualty market, where their ability to accurately price risk and achieve necessary rate increases becomes a significant competitive advantage. It demonstrates that RLI's strategy allows it to react rationally and opportunistically to market signals, even if it results in some short-term top-line volatility in certain segments. They play the long game.
That's a crucial insight. They're not afraid to strategically shrink in one area to protect profits while aggressively pursuing opportunities in another. It's truly a flexible, dynamic strategy, prioritizing long-term health over maybe short-term vanity metrics like market share. Okay, now let's turn to the numbers themselves, because RLI's financial track record is truly distinguished by its consistency and profitability over time. When we look at a decade of profitability, the historical view from 2015 to 2024, it paints a very, very clear picture. This company has consistently grown its premium base while maintaining those underwriting margins significantly better than the industry average, which in turn translates into strong earnings and a consistent compounding of shareholder value, often measured by book value per share. Could you highlight some of the key trends and figures that really stand out from this period, especially regarding that GAAP combined ratio we keep mentioning?
The consistency in the numbers is, it really is remarkable. If we look at the GAAP combined ratio, like you said, it's almost always in the 80s year after year. It rarely creeps up much higher. For example, back in 2015, it was an impressive 83.2%. And even in 2024, it remained a stellar 86.2%. That's a direct result of their unwavering underwriting philosophy playing out directly in their financials. This means they consistently generate an underwriting profit, which is the goal. Even through various market cycles, hard markets, soft markets, they maintain these strong margins, which is genuinely a rare feat in this industry. Meanwhile, their gross premiums written grew steadily from about $751 million in 2015 to over $2 billion in 2024. This demonstrates that disciplined profitability doesn't mean stagnation. It means profitable growth over the long term. And their book value per share steadily increased from $9.46 in 2015 to $16.59 in 2024, consistently compounding shareholder value over that decade. Their return on equity was also consistently strong, generally in the mid-teens to low 20s, which showcases efficient capital utilization. They make good money in the capital they employ.
And speaking of those numbers, there's a striking anomaly in the year 2022. We see net earnings shoot up to over $610 million, diluted EPS jumps to $13.23, and return on equity hits 49.1%. Those are huge numbers compared to the surrounding years. The source material notes this was significantly impacted by a one-time pre-tax gain of $434.4 million, or about $9.49 per diluted share, from the sale of the company's investment in Maui Jim, Inc., the sunglasses company. This is a really great example of why context is everything when looking at financial data, isn't it? You can't just look at 1 year in isolation.
Precisely. It's absolutely critical to understand the story behind those numbers, not just the headline numbers themselves, to avoid misinterpreting that outlier year as typical operating performance. The sale of Maui Jim was a significant one-time event that definitely boosted those particular metrics for that specific year. While it certainly demonstrated the value RLI can create from its investments over the long term, it shouldn't be seen as indicative of their core recurring underwriting and investment income power.
Right. Makes sense. Moving beyond the historical view, let's look at recent segment performance, specifically for the 6 months ended June 30, 2025. This gives us a really granular, almost real-time look at how RLI is responding to the current bifurcated market dynamics we just discussed. What does that show?
Yeah, this recent data starkly illustrates their current strategic posture. Let's break it down by segment. The casualty segment continued its momentum, growing gross premiums written by 7.0% compared to the first half of 2024, reaching $668.5 million. Importantly, it maintained profitability with a combined ratio of 96.5%, still making money there. The surety segment also saw a healthy 7.0% increase in premiums, hitting $105 million, with an even stronger combined ratio of 87.9%. Very profitable. But, critically, observe the property segment. Gross premiums written actually declined by 10.0%. falling to $346.5 million compared to the prior year period. Yet, and this is key, it remained incredibly profitable with a remarkably low combined ratio of just 62.1%. They made a lot of money on less business. Overall, total gross premiums written across the entire company saw only a modest 1.1% increase to $1.12 billion for the half year, but the total combined ratio remained excellent at 84.5%.
Wow, that's incredibly telling. You can really see their discipline in action. A 10% contraction in property premiums, but still highly profitable with that incredibly low 62.1% combined ratio. That's walking the talk. Meanwhile, they're growing casualty and surety by 7% each, where the market conditions are better. It's a real testament to their ability to adapt, to pivot capital, and to prioritize profit over raw top-line growth, even if it means sacrificing some revenue in a less attractive market. And importantly, all three segments remain profitable on an underwriting basis, which is the ultimate goal. Now, underpinning all this is RLI's strong investment portfolio and balance sheet strength. What role does their investment income play, and just how robust is their capital position?
Well, their investment portfolio is a significant and, importantly, growing contributor to their overall earnings picture. Net investment income increased by a solid 18% in 2024 and by another 16.1% in the second quarter of 2025 alone. This growth is largely thanks to higher interest rates, allowing them to reinvest the substantial operating cash flows the company generates into higher-yielding securities. Regarding capital, RLI maintains exceptional capital adequacy with remarkably low financial leverage. As of June 30, 2025, they had total shareholders' equity of $1.73 billion against only $100 million in debt. That's a very, very conservative debt-to-equity ratio, and it's a key factor supporting their A-plus rating from AM Best. That financial strength gives them flexibility. Moreover, the business consistently generates robust operating cash flow, which is really the lifeblood for both investment back into the business and those all-important shareholder returns we'll talk more about. Operating cash flow actually rose 23.2% to $174.7 million in just the second quarter of 2025.
It sounds like their entire financial model is a powerful self-reinforcing cycle. Can you maybe elaborate on how all these pieces, the disciplined underwriting, the conservative investments, the strong cash flow, and the solid capital base tie together to create such a durable and efficient business machine?
Absolutely. It's really an elegant feedback loop when you look at it. Disciplined underwriting generates consistent profits and strong operating cash flow. That cash is then invested conservatively, primarily in high-quality bonds, which generates a steady and growing stream of investment income. The combination of underwriting profits and investment income drives growth in book value per share and strengthens the overall balance sheet. This, in turn, supports the high financial strength ratings necessary to attract and retain profitable business from brokers and customers who value that security. And so, the cycle continues, creating a very durable and efficient business that essentially feeds itself over time.
Okay, while RLI's track record and model are certainly impressive, no company operates in a vacuum, right? And even the most disciplined players face challenges. Let's look at some of the headwinds RLI has been navigating recently, particularly maybe from 2023 through 2025. What are the most pressing segment-specific challenges they're dealing with?
Yeah, it's not all smooth sailing. The most significant headwind right now is undoubtedly the property segment contraction. As we touched on, there's intense competition and rate softening, specifically in the excess and surplus property market. Our sources indicate an influx of capital and approximately 20 new competitors jumping into that space over the last 2 years, which has predictably created an environment of incredibly aggressive pricing. People are cutting rates to win business. True to its philosophy, RLI has chosen not to compete on price, where they believe the risk-reward profile is inadequate. They won't write business they think will lose money just to keep the premium volume up. This has resulted in that deliberate contraction of this business line, with growth premiums written declining by 10% in the second quarter of 2025. This strategic pullback, while protective of long-term profitability, has actually been the primary cause of the company's recent flat overall top-line growth, which, as you might expect, has drawn some scrutiny from the market.
That decision to actively shrink a segment, even if it leads to flat top-line growth, really seems to be a real-world demonstration of their profitability over growth philosophy in action. How does that choice reflect their disciplined approach, especially when, let's be honest, many investors are focused purely on revenue growth figures quarter to quarter?
It's a classic example, isn't it? They are willing to sacrifice short-term revenue and potentially face some negative market reaction to maintain their rigorous underwriting standards. This is precisely the kind of disciplined decision-making that has defined their long-term success. But it can definitely create noise in quarterly reports for those who don't fully understand the underlying strategy or the cyclical nature of insurance. They prioritize the quality of earnings over the sheer quantity of premiums.
Okay. Now, shifting to the casualty segment, they're facing significant loss cost pressures. You mentioned earlier that while the casualty market is experiencing rate hardening, which is generally a positive for revenue growth, the segment is simultaneously grappling with this loss cost inflation. What exactly does loss cost inflation mean in this context, and how is RLI responding to that pressure?
Right. Loss cost inflation basically means the cost of settling claims is going up, and often faster than general inflation. This is driven by two main factors. First, there's general economic inflation, which increases the cost of everything from auto parts and medical care to construction materials used in repairs after an accident. Pretty straightforward. Second, there's this phenomenon called social inflation, which is a bit harder to pin down, but definitely real. It refers to trends like more aggressive litigation tactics by plaintiff attorneys, increasingly plaintiff-friendly legal environments in some jurisdictions, and significantly larger jury awards, particularly for things like commercial auto and transportation liability claims. So, a commercial truck accident today might lead to a significantly higher payout than it would have 5 or 10 years ago, even for very similar injuries or damages. In fact, RLI's own casualty accident year loss ratio in the fourth quarter of 2024 was actually higher than their internal projections had anticipated, signaling the intensity of these pressures. In response, RLI has been aggressively pursuing rate increases. They achieved an average of 14% on their auto coverages in the second quarter of 2025 alone, and they're tightening their underwriting standards further to mitigate the impact of this rise in claim severity. These are proactive and necessary steps to protect their margins in that line.
Makes sense. Beyond these segment-specific challenges, there are also broader macroeconomic and market factors at play. How has the recent interest rate environment impacted RLI? And what about general inflation and the ongoing risk of catastrophe losses?
Well, the rise in interest rates that we saw from 2022 through 2023 has actually been a net benefit for RLI, primarily for their investment portfolio. Their ability to reinvest their substantial operating cash flow into higher-yielding fixed-income securities has provided a significant boost to their net investment income. That income stream grew by a hefty 40% in 2023 and has continued to show strong double-digit growth into 2025. This provides a reliable source of earnings that helps offset some of the underwriting volatility. However, while higher interest rates benefited the investment portfolio, persistent inflation across the economy has been a direct headwind for the underwriting side of the business, as we just discussed with loss costs. Inflation increases the cost of everything needed to settle claims, putting upward pressure on loss ratios across the board. This just makes achieving adequate pricing a critical and ongoing challenge for them and the whole industry. And of course, catastrophe losses are an inherent exposure. It just comes with the territory and property insurance. RLI's business model carries exposure to unpredictable and potentially severe losses from natural disasters.
While this is a managed risk through reinsurance and sophisticated modeling, large events can still have a material impact on quarterly or annual results. In 2023, for instance, the company absorbed the largest net catastrophe loss in its entire history as a result of the devastating wildfires in Hawaii. This is a very stark reminder of the volatility inherent in its property book and also highlighted its geographic concentration risk, which we should probably touch on later.
Right. So the current environment really serves as a kind of real-world stress test of RLI's foundational principle of prioritizing profitability over growth. The decision to shrink the property book in the face of what they see as irrational pricing is a classic example of this discipline in action, even if it creates a divergence between their long-term strategy and the market's sometimes short-term focus on just revenue growth. From an investor's perspective, looking ahead, what's the most critical variable for RLI's near-term earnings performance in this complex environment?
I think the critical variable for their near-term earnings performance is really their ability to successfully secure adequate rate increases, specifically in their large casualty segment. This is crucial to offset both those persistent inflationary pressures on claims costs and the deliberate revenue decline they're engineering in the property segment. Getting that dynamic balance right is what investors will likely be watching most closely in the coming quarters.
Okay. Despite these headwinds, RLI isn't just standing still, right? They're actively looking for avenues to grow, always grounded in their core competencies of specialized underwriting and disciplined market expansion. What are some of their key growth opportunities that stand out right now? Where can they leverage their strengths?
One clear opportunity is the surety segment expansion. This segment has consistently been a source of strength and profitable growth for RLI, often exceeding expectations in recent periods. The company is actively investing in this franchise. For instance, they recently renewed and expanded their reinsurance treaty for surety, which essentially increases their capacity to offer larger bonds and support the growing needs of their contractor clients. That allows them to bid on bigger projects. Management is also leveraging new digital tools to make it easier for producers, the brokers, to do business with RLI in the surety space, helping them win new accounts more efficiently. And looking longer term, this segment is also nicely poised to benefit from potential tailwinds related to increased government infrastructure spending, which would naturally drive demand for the performance bonds RLI provides.
Right, that sounds like a solid, if perhaps less flashy, growth engine. What about their large casualty business? How do they find selective growth there, given the loss cost pressures we just discussed? And are they looking at any other long-term opportunities in emerging markets or new risk areas?
Yeah, despite the well-documented loss cost pressures, the hard market conditions that persist in many casualty lines actually present a significant opportunity for a disciplined underwriter like RLI. As some competitors may struggle with profitability or maybe pull back capacity because they can't get the rates they need, RLI can leverage its strong balance sheet and deep underwriting expertise to selectively write more business, but only at what they deem attractive rates. The 24% growth we saw in their personal umbrella product in the second quarter of 2025 is a prime example of this strategy in action. It shows their ability to identify and capitalize on profitable niches within the broader casualty segment, even while facing headwinds elsewhere. And looking further out, yes, the broader specialty insurance market continues to evolve, constantly creating demand for entirely new types of coverage. RLI's expertise-driven business model, which is built on patiently entering and mastering complex underwriting niches, makes them structurally well-suited to methodically expand these emerging risk categories over time.
Think about growth areas like cyber insurance, which is still relatively new, risk management for renewable energy projects, or liability coverage for new cutting-edge technologies like AI or autonomous vehicles. They aren't necessarily chasing every trend, but they are selectively applying their core strength to these new frontiers where expertise matters most.
It's clear they're very strategic about where they direct their energy and capital. What kind of strategic initiatives are they pursuing to support this growth and maintain their competitive edge? Are they investing heavily in technology and digital transformation, for example? And what's their overall approach to acquisitions? Have they been active there?
On the technology front, RLI is making targeted investments, primarily aimed at improving the customer and producer experience. These aren't necessarily moonshot AI projects, but practical enhancements. These initiatives include upgrades to the digital platforms and customer relationship management, or CRM, systems. These are designed to streamline underwriting processes and strengthen those crucial distribution relationships with brokers. Now, while RLI's absolute spending on technology might be less than that of much larger competitors, these focused investments are intended to improve operational efficiency and solidify its market position without disrupting its core underwriting culture. It's about targeted improvement, not radical overhaul. Regarding acquisitions, RLI's growth story has been overwhelmingly organic. Their history of acquisitions is actually very limited. Most recent notable transaction mentioned in our sources was the purchase of a small specialty agency way back in 2016. This clear preference for organic growth really reinforces their overall philosophy.
they prefer building expertise internally and growing deliberately, rather than pursuing large, potentially disruptive M&A deals that could dilute their culture or compromise their underwriting discipline.
Yeah, that preference for organic growth makes perfect sense, given how much emphasis they place on the internal culture and expertise. Now, let's pivot specifically to the shareholder experience. How does RLI manage its capital, and what does that mean for investors? This brings us to capital allocation and shareholder returns. RLI has one of the most impressive dividend track records in the entire U.S. stock market, right? Can you elaborate on that?
Indeed. It's quite something. When we talk about their dividend policy and history, it's truly remarkable. As of February 2025, the company has increased its regular quarterly dividend for 50 consecutive years. That achievement places RLI in the elite group of companies known as Dividend Kings, which requires 50-plus years of consecutive dividend increases. It shows incredible consistency and commitment. The most recently declared regular dividend mentioned was $0.16 per share per quarter. But here's the really unique aspect of RLI's approach. They consistently use special dividends to return capital that management determines is not needed to support future business growth. They paid a special dividend in each of the last 14 years, and these payments can be very, very significant, often representing a much larger portion of the total annual cash return to shareholders than the regular quarterly dividend. For example, RLI paid a $2 per share special dividend in December 2023, and an even larger $4 per share special dividend in November 2024. Over the last decade, the combination of these regular and special dividends has resulted in RLI returning nearly $1.5 billion in cash directly to its shareholders.
Okay, so it sounds like focusing solely on the regular dividend yield, which might look low on a stock screener, would give a very incomplete picture of RLI's actual cash return to shareholders. So what would be a more accurate way for investors to think about their total yield, and what's the trade-off involved with relying on those special dividends?
You're absolutely right. Relying solely on the regular dividend yield, which might look low, maybe around 0.95% based on recent figures, would be highly misleading. The special dividends dramatically boost the total yield. For instance, some sources calculate an all-in, or total, yield of around 3.85% based on recent total payments, regular plus special. Now, that total yield can be quite competitive, but the trade-off is its variability. Investors must be comfortable with the fact that the size of the special dividend is not guaranteed and is directly linked to the company's annual operational success and available excess capital each year. It's a flexible release valve for returning cash, not a fixed entitlement.
Right, that makes sense. It's variable, but potentially much larger. Now, in contrast to this robust dividend policy, RLI does not appear to utilize share repurchase programs as a significant tool for capital return. Their 2024 annual report explicitly states, issuer purchases of equity securities not applicable. Given all this, what are RLI's clear capital allocation priorities? How do they decide what to do with their profits?
Their actions over many years reveal a very clear and disciplined hierarchy for capital allocation. First and foremost, they reinvest in the business. This means funding organic growth opportunities, maintaining their strong balance sheet, and ensuring they keep those superior financial strength ratings. That's priority number one. Second, they fund a growing regular dividend, continuing that impressive 50-year streak of increases. They clearly value that consistency. And third, any capital remaining after those first two priorities are fully met is deemed excess by management and is returned directly to shareholders via those large variable special dividends.
So their capital allocation strategy clearly prioritizes direct cash returns based on actual performance rather than using excess cash for stock buybacks. Mm-hmm. It really demonstrates a strong belief that returning cash directly to the company's owners is the most efficient use of capital once the needs of the business have been fully met. Okay, beyond the numbers and strategies, the people running the show and how they run it are absolutely critical for any company's long-term success, wouldn't you agree? Let's delve into management quality and corporate governance. What can you tell us about RLI's management team and track record and their approach to corporate governance practices? How do they stack up?
Yeah, leadership is key, especially for maintaining a culture like RLI's. Their executive team is characterized by both deep experience and, importantly, a long tenure with the company. This is entirely consistent with their stable, long-term strategic orientation. You don't see a revolving door at the top. The leadership's execution capabilities are probably best evidenced by that exceptional long-term financial performance we've been discussing. Those multi-decade streaks of underwriting profitability and consecutive dividend increases are direct testaments to the management team's consistent and disciplined execution of the company's core business strategy over a very long time. Regarding governance specifically, RLI has implemented several best practices that promote effective oversight and alignment with shareholder interests. The roles of chairman of the board and chief executive officer have been separated since the beginning of 2022. That's a key governance practice that enhances board independence and oversight. The board itself is composed of 10 director nominees, and 9 of whom are classified as independent, ensuring that oversight isn't unduly influenced by management.
Furthermore, all directors are elected annually, which provides shareholders with a regular and direct mechanism for holding the board accountable. The company also actively seeks shareholder feedback, including through an advisory say-on-pay vote on executive compensation. And as we mentioned, the strong ownership culture fostered by its ESOP further aligns the interests of employees with those of external shareholders, creating a powerful incentive for all stakeholders to focus on long-term value creation.
That sounds like a pretty robust governance structure, which seems crucial for supporting RLI's reliable long-term performance and maintaining that discipline. Now, of course, every investment comes with risks, and RLI is certainly no exception. Let's look at the landscape of potential challenges they face, as detailed in their regulatory filings. This is our risk assessment. What are some of the key business risks inherent in their model? What keeps them up at night?
Well, the most fundamental risk for any insurer, RLI included, is underwriting and reserving risk. This is simply the possibility that the premiums they collect today will ultimately be insufficient to cover the future cost of claims. This can happen either through mispricing the risk at the outset or through inadequate reserving for future claim payments. RLI's loss reserves, like any insurer's, are based on complex estimates that are inherently uncertain. If actual losses turn out to be higher than the amounts they've reserved, the company's future profitability would be materially and adversely affected. It's the core risk of the business. Then there's catastrophe risk. As an insurer of property, particularly in catastrophe-prone areas, RLI has significant exposure to unpredictable and potentially severe losses from natural catastrophes, think hurricanes, earthquakes, wildfires. A single large event or a series of events in a given year could cause substantial financial losses and significant volatility in the company's earnings. They also face reinsurance risk. RLI cedes or transfers a portion of its risk to reinsurance companies to limit its maximum potential loss from any single event or line of business. This strategy, while necessary, exposes RLI to two primary forms of reinsurance risk. First is the credit risk that a reinsurer may be unable or unwilling to pay its share of claims when needed. Second is the market risk that reinsurance may become unavailable or prohibitively expensive in the future, potentially forcing RLI to retain more risk itself or reduce the amount of business it writes. And of course, there's competition and cyclicality. The P&C insurance industry is intensely competitive and notoriously cyclical. During soft market phases, intense competition can drive down premium rates to unprofitable levels. RLI's discipline may force it to shed business in such an environment, impacting its revenue, and this risk is currently manifesting, as we've discussed, in the commercial property market.
Right. Beyond these general business risks that many insurers face, are there specific concentration risks that RLI faces, perhaps either geographically or maybe in terms of its business relationships?
Yes, there are two notable concentration risks highlighted in the analysis. First is geographic concentration. A significant portion of RLI's direct premium is concentrated in just a few key states. In 2024, for example, 57% of their direct premiums were derived from just 4 states. Florida at 20%, California 18%, Texas 11%, and New York 8%. This concentration makes the company's results disproportionately vulnerable to adverse changes in the legal or regulatory environment, or perhaps more acutely, the catastrophic event landscape in these specific high-value states. Second, there's broker concentration. In 2024, 36% of RLI's premium revenues were generated through a relatively small number of key brokers and carrier partners. The loss of even one major distribution relationship could potentially have a material adverse effect on the company's ability to source new profitable business.
Okay. And finally, what about broader operational and macroeconomic risks that could impact them?
Well, as a financial institution that handles a lot of sensitive customer and financial data, RLI is definitely a target for cybersecurity attacks. A significant breach could lead to operational disruptions, potentially large financial losses, regulatory penalties, and significant reputational damage. That's a risk for almost any company today, but particularly financial ones. Additionally, demand for many of RLI's products, particularly in the surety and casualty segments, is tied pretty closely to the health of the broader economy. This creates economic sensitivity. A significant economic downturn could lead to reduced construction activity, lower corporate revenues, and generally less economic activity, which would in turn reduce demand for insurance and could negatively impact RLI's revenue and profitability.
Okay. So, putting it all together, while RLI's discipline is clearly a major strength, it certainly doesn't eliminate risk. In your view, what are the most acute near-term threats to the investment thesis?
And what tangible examples really underscore these concerns?
I think the most acute near-term threats remain those cyclical pressures currently impacting the property market, which are forcing RLI to choose profitability over growth in that segment right now. And also, the ever-present risk of a major catastrophe hitting hard in one of its key geographically concentrated states like Florida or California. The Hawaiian wildfires in 2023, where RLI absorbed its largest net catastrophe loss ever, were a very real, very tangible demonstration of that geographic concentration risk translating directly into material financial losses. These are definitely tangible, not just theoretical, concerns for the company and its investors.
Okay, so we've got a really good understanding now of what RLI does, how it performs so consistently, and the key risks it faces. But the big question for any investor is, what is the market actually paying for this company? Valuation analysis helps us understand if the current price reflects its unique qualities and its future prospects. Let's start with the historical valuation context. What do RLI's price to earnings, PE ratio, and price to book, PB ratio, tell us about its historical market perception? How has it been valued over time?
Right, valuation is key. RLI's price to earnings, PE ratio, has shown significant volatility over time, which actually isn't that uncommon for strong performers in cyclical industries like insurance. Their earnings can swing a bit year to year. As of August 2025, the analysis puts its PE ratio at 19.57. Now, this is slightly below its recent 12-month average of 20.87, but it still remains noticeably above its 3-year average of 16.9 and its 5-year historical average of 18.49. So what this suggests is that while the valuation has maybe come down a bit from recent peaks, it is still somewhat elevated compared to its medium-term history. The market is clearly willing to pay a consistent premium for RLI's dependable profitability and disciplined growth profile. The price-to-book PB ratio is often considered an even more critical valuation metric for insurers. As of August 2025, RLI's PB ratio was approximately 3.5 to 3.6 times its book value per share. Now, this is below the peak of nearly 5 times book value, 4.95, reached at the end of 2024, but it is broadly consistent with the premium valuation the company has sustained over the past several years.
Why is the price-to-book ratio often considered a more stable and perhaps more critical metric for insurers than the PD ratio? And what does RLI's consistent premium valuation on this PB metric suggest about market perception?
Well, PB is often critical because book value, or shareholders' equity, essentially represents the tangible net assets available to generate future earnings for an insurance company. These are the assets, the capital that underpin their underwriting capacity and investment portfolio. It's the core value.
Yeah.
RLI's consistent premium and its PB ratio suggests the market sees their assets as being highly productive and managed with superior profitability and discipline compared to peers. It justifies paying a higher multiple for each dollar of their book value. It's really an affirmation that the market believes RLI's management effectively stewards its capital to generate consistently strong returns, better than the average insurer.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, to truly understand RLI's valuation, we really need to compare it to others in its space, like other specialty insurers. Let's look at peer group benchmarking as of August 2025, comparing RLI to some relevant names like Arch Capital, Kinsale Capital, and WR Berkeley. Could you walk us through the key numbers from Table 3 in the analysis and highlight the main takeaways from that comparison?
Certainly. Let's look at the key metrics side by side, roughly as of August 2025. For RLI Corp, RLI, market cap around $6.2B, PE ratio TTM 19.6, PB ratio current 3.60, return on equity TTM 16.1%, and that regular dividend yield, FWD, of 0.95%. For Arch Capital Group, ACGL, much larger market cap at $34.3B, PE ratio TTM much lower at 9.5, PB ratio current also lower at 1.55, ROE TTM slightly higher at 18.5%, and essentially no regular dividend yield, 0.00%. For Kinsale Capital Group, KNSL, market cap $10.6B, PE ratio TTM higher at 23.5, PB ratio current much higher at 6.25, ROE TTM significantly higher at 28.7%, but a very low regular dividend yield, FWD TTM 16.2, PB ratio current 2.93, ROE TTM strong at 20.6%, and a higher regular dividend yield, FWD of 2.27%. Though note that WRB's yield often includes special dividends in some calculations, which can inflate that regular figure slightly depending on the source. So from this comparison, we see two clear trends emerge regarding RLI's valuation. First, RLI trades at a substantial premium to traditional peers.
Its valuation, particularly its PB ratio, is significantly higher than larger, more diversified peers like Arch Capital and WR Berkeley. For instance, RLI's PB ratio of 3.60 is more than double Arch Capital's 1.55. Second, RLI trades at a noticeable discount to high-growth peers. RLI is valued at a significant discount compared to Kinsale Capital Group, which is seen as a high-growth E&S specialist. Kinsale's much higher PB ratio of over 6.25 clearly reflects the market's very high expectations for its future growth, which has historically been significantly faster than RLI's more measured pace.
Interesting positioning. So the market is consistently willing to pay a higher multiple for each dollar of RLI's book value compared to most of its traditional peers, but not as high as the racier growth names. What fundamentally justifies this premium valuation for RLI in your analysis? Why pay more for RLI's assets than Arch's, for example?
I think this premium is fundamentally justified by the company's long-term, structurally superior profitability. RLI's consistent ability to generate a high return on equity, or ROE, year after year, and maintain that industry-leading combined ratio provides the solid basis for this valuation premium. The market is essentially pricing in the expectation based on decades of history that RLI's management will continue to be a more profitable and reliable steward of shareholder capital than the average insurer. They are simply expected to get more bang for their book value over time.
Okay. Let's quickly revisit the dividend yield attractiveness. As we noted, on the surface, RLI's forward dividend yield of approximately 0.95% based solely on its regular quarterly dividend appears rather unattractive, especially compared to some other stable companies or even W.R. Berkley in that peer group. What's the full story here for income-focused investors?
Yeah, it's really important to understand the full picture here. Relying solely on that low, regular dividend yield would give a very incomplete and frankly misleading picture of RLI's actual cash return to shareholders. As we discussed extensively, the company's primary method of returning excess capital is through its large annual special dividend. When these substantial payments are included in the calculation, the total shareholder yield is substantially higher and far more representative of the actual cash return investors have received. For example, as mentioned, some sources calculate an all-in total yield of around 3.85% based on recent total payments, regular plus special. Now, that total yield is certainly competitive, but investors absolutely must be comfortable with its inherent variability, as the size of the special dividend is directly dependent on the company's annual performance and capital needs year by year. #Hashtag Adderaway.
Okay, so what's the ultimate takeaway from our deep dive into RLI Corp? We've explored a company that certainly isn't your average insurer, that's for sure, but one that offers a really compelling case study in disciplined execution and consistent value creation over a very long time.
Yeah, I think at its heart, RLI's primary differentiator isn't just what it does, but profoundly how it does it. It's that deeply ingrained 50-year-old corporate culture that unequivocally prioritizes underwriting profit over top-line growth, almost religiously. This philosophy, reinforced by that employee ownership structure, the ESOP, and that unique capital return policy favoring large variable special dividends, manifests directly in a structurally superior combined ratio and that remarkable 28-year streak of underwriting profitability.
And these core competitive advantages, their specialized underwriting expertise and that disciplined culture, have proven highly sustainable over multiple decades. They seem built on accumulated knowledge and institutional habit, making them very difficult for competitors to simply replicate quickly. However, these advantages do not make RLI immune to severe cyclical market pressures, as the current challenges they're facing in the property market clearly demonstrate. They're not miracle workers.
Right. And in light of these current dynamics, RLI appears to be defensively and, I would argue, rationally positioned for the current bifurcated cycle. They're leveraging their discipline to avoid unprofitable competition in the softening property market while using their expertise to push for necessary rate increases in the hardening casualty market. Now, this posture may very well lead to muted or even flat overall top-line growth in the near term, which could create a headwind for the stock price if the market only focuses on growth. But it is, fundamentally, the correct strategic approach to protect long-term profitability and book value growth, and it's fully consistent with their historical proven model.
So as our listeners continue to follow RLI, what should they keep an eye on? What are the key indicators for their future performance and the market's ongoing perception?
Well, the most significant risks remain those cyclical market pressures. Especially in property, watching for signs of stabilization or a turn there would be key. And also, the ever-present risk of a major catastrophe hitting one of their concentrated states like Florida or California. Potential catalysts for outperformance could include a cyclical turn in that property market, allowing them to profitably grow that segment once again. Continued strong growth and profitability in the surety segment, perhaps boosted eventually by government infrastructure spending, would also be a positive. And maybe better than expected success in managing those casualty loss costs, leading to margin expansion there, would certainly contribute to favorable results. And of course, keep an eye out for that year-end special dividend announcement. A particularly large one would definitely highlight the robust, cash-generative nature of their business model, which is really a hallmark of their long-term success.
Right. So as you think about RLI, maybe consider this final thought. In an era where companies are constantly pressured for aggressive top-line growth and market share at almost any cost, does RLI's unwavering commitment to profitable growth, even if it means strategically shrinking certain segments sometimes, offer a more resilient and ultimately perhaps more rewarding model for long-term value creation? And maybe even think about what other industries or perhaps even aspects of your own work or life could benefit from such a disciplined, profit-first, expertise-driven philosophy in their operations. We certainly hope this deep dive into RLI Corp has given you a clearer understanding of a truly unique player in the insurance world, and perhaps even inspired you to apply some of their principles of focused expertise and disciplined execution in your own fields or other decisions. Thanks so much for joining us on the deep dive.